John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
We are pleased to be joined by DeMarco Farr, former player in the National Football League, defensive lineman for the Rams, UW, you name it. But the big thing he's doing right now, he's doing sidelines on the Rams broadcast, and I'm fortunate enough to be able to see him at least two, three times a year down in the sidelines, spending time comparing notes and all these different things. Well, it comes down to this, DeMarco. Championship game in New Orleans. Rams come in with the victory. The Saints have home field. How's this all going to sort out?
Man, it's going to be tough. I'm trying to liken this to something. It's like going back to the dentist for a root canal. I mean, it's a sight of pain for you as a Ram and as a Ram fan. But to get to where you want to go, if you want to get to Atlanta, you got to go through New Orleans. I think we've kind of known that since week 9 after the Saints beat them. So if you want to right that wrong and, like you said, make this season magical, you got to go back through New Orleans to get it done.
Well, take us back to the 43-40 game and what happened in that one that the Saints were able to pull out the victory.
You know, it was a battle. It was an absolute battle. The Saints got on top, and then the Rams had the furious comeback, and then Drew Brees made the play at the end of the game to kind of seal it for his football team. But, you know, a lot of tricks, a lot of turns, a lot of things that Sean McVay says he wants back. Maybe that fake field goal where Johnny Hecker almost got it. I thought he picked it up, but the spot said he didn't. But a few things go, you know, differently there. Maybe the Rams pick up the victory there, and we're having the game here instead of going to New Orleans. But it is what it is. It's two teams that were on a collision course. They're both very good on offense. They're both very sound on defense. So it's best team on game days. It's what you want in professional football, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, of course, that's the great part about this championship round. You got the four best offenses in the league, four of the best play callers in the league, some of the best quarterbacks in the league, and it just had so much fun back in the days with the greatest show on turf. But as a defensive guy, you got to be shaking your head. It's like, what's going on in this sport?
You know, thank God I was born when I was. I didn't have to play in this era where it's all offensive. But, you know, I mean, for guys like Aaron Donald, for guys like Cam Jordan, I mean, this is perfect football for you. I mean, it's basically all pass. But don't sleep on the run game. Kamara, Ingram are just as dangerous. And who knew the Rams at the end of the year would be a two-headed monster running the football? C.J. Anderson has been a revelation for this football team. And I was going to ask you, we have been racking our brain around here. Can you think of a better late-season pickup than C.J. Anderson?
I can't.
In the history of the game?
Yeah, I mean, I can't. I mean, to be able to gain over 400 yards in three games, I mean, that's incredible, particularly, you know, knowing that he was on the street. I mean, he was 10 pounds overweight because of, I guess, with his wife being pregnant and all that stuff. I mean, just remarkable. And plus, what's great is that he's such a good guy. I mean, I don't know if you saw it. Right after the game, you were all waiting in the locker room for him, and you know how big the crowd was because, I mean, he was the main story for the most part. And, you know, first thing he did, he looked up and he came over to me and, you know, asked about my wife, asked about how I was doing. I mean, how great is that?
It's awesome. I mean, look, you talk about ready for the moment. And I guess we can chalk this under or put this under what are the Raiders doing? If this guy was this good, then why isn't he still in Oakland? But ask Khalil Mack the same question. But he's been absolutely fantastic for the Rams. You know, I kind of said his running style reminds me of the late Craig Hayward. I mean, he looks for daylight. He always looks for the end zone. But if he has a chance to run right through you, that's exactly where he's going.
Oh, no question about it. And, of course, it's just so much fun to see that kind of two-headed monster go. Where would you say Todd Gurley is? You could see that, you know, not that he's irritated by this, but he's challenged by this because, you know, with the knee injury and that, here's CJ having, you know, the runs, but then he came back and he gains over 100 yards.
Oh, I know. I mean, I think Todd Gurley is as close to 100% as you can be. You know, he had a month off. But just like anyone else, I mean, you know, when you ask Todd a question about his health, when he's sitting anywhere close to Jared Goff and his offensive line, expect a snarky answer because he knows what they're going through. It's not just about him. But as far as his ability and what he can do, a two-headed monster or a guy that can take some of the heat off him, that can do the dirty work so he can just be the scalpel in the offense, the slasher, I think he can really excel at that role. So, you know, I think you can give him as many carries as he can take and possibly more. So I thought last week was a great feeling out process for him. He had a great game. But I think you'll see more of Todd Gurley in New Orleans this weekend.
So what's it going to take for the Rams to be able to win in a very tough environment on the road?
You know what's funny? I mean, I looked at their defense, and I love their defense. I love their defensive coordinator. But are we talking about Dennis Allen doing anything that's cutting edge? Probably not. They stop the run. They do a great job. But this is funny. I looked. I can't find a single neutral zone infraction by a defensive player for New Orleans this year. So what does that tell me? What does that tell us? They sit on the line of scrimmage and catch. Their first job is to stop the run. Secondary is get to the passer. So when you look at who they played, as far as the elite quarterbacks or the elite pocket passers, I think it's been Matt Ryan, Roethlisberger, and Goff. If you want to count Fitzpatrick, he did beat them, but I think this could be set up for a day where Jared Goff has time to throw and has to throw it 35 times to win the football game. But you have to be accurate. That's number one. And number two, you've got to get help from your receiving corps. Sometimes he's not going to be able to throw you open. You're going to have to make a play on the ball.
Yeah, and I think that's the one thing that's really good about the offensive line of the Rams. I mean, how smart they were. I know after the game, Andrew Whitworth admitted they did not play well in last year's playoff game. This one, they were focused. They were able to notice where different alignments were as far as how the stunts were going to go, how the defensive linemen of the Cowboys. And I would imagine what things could they have as far as being smart to try to handle the defensive line of the Saints?
Well, I think, if it gets into where Jared Goff and Drew Brees are dueling, if both defenses are stopping the run and both quarterbacks step to the forefront, I think the Rams are going to have, or they'll be able to give Jared Goff time. Now, it depends on what happens with Cam Jordan on that side. It's another good left end for right tackle Rob Havenstein to deal with. But last week against DeMarcus Lawrence, we didn't say his name a whole lot during that game. So if that carries over, you'll have time, or Jared Goff will have time to survey the field and get the ball out. But he's got to be accurate, like you said. He's got to hit the routes, make the throws you should make, and then when you have a chance to go vertical, you've got to be able to hit that as well.
Two concerns that I have that actually did pretty well. One was, of course, it hasn't been the greatest season for Ndamukong Suh, but boy, did he play well in the game on Saturday. He looked like Ndamukong Suh as a dominant player.
You know what's funny? Are you a Star Wars guy like me? Are you
a Star Wars geek? Not as probably as good as you, but a little bit.
Okay, he's the Millennium Falcon, and it seems like the hyperdrive has been fixed. And when the hyperdrive is fixed on the Millennium Falcon, nobody can touch it. So if he keeps playing like that, you know, I wouldn't say run game solved, but you've got a better chance of stopping guys like Kamara and Ingram. If you can push the center or push the one technique, exploit the A-gap, refuse to be blocked, single blocked in the middle, you've got a chance to stop the run and force Drew Brees to throw the football to beat you. And with that, then you're opening yourself up for Aaron Donald and company to get to you. So if Sue plays like that, then the defense that we thought the Rams would have with Sue actually is alive and breathing again.
No doubt. And then the other one was Marcus Peters, who was struggling at midseason, and he's constantly involved with either pushing matches, yelling matches, little battles with the head coach of the Saints. I mean, what I wonder is that, Can he be distracted? Because that's something I worry about a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he can be distracted. I mean, that's been his MO forever. I mean, of the all-time hotheads in league history, I think he might be top five. Cortland Finnegan, who else? Greg Lloyd, guys that will just that are always. What did they call Bill O'Brien when he left New England? They called him Teapot. Like he was always boiling.
Mm-hmm,
well, that's Marcus Peters. It doesn't take an awful lot to get him to go off. So he has got to realize that, or somebody on the field with him has got to relay that to him. Hey, look, they are trying to get under your skin. They are trying to take your focus away from doing your job so they can exploit you. But it's one of those things. He runs hot all the time.
No doubt. So who's going to win this game?
You know, toughy. I'll say the team that doesn't turn the ball over has the best chance, but that's an easy way out. I'll say this. If the Rams can get that running game going, and when you talk about what it takes to win in New Orleans and what it's like in New Orleans, it's going to be loud there. So the only way I know how to take the crowd out of it is to run the daylights out of the football. So if they get that going and they can take the crowd out and kind of make it a neutral environment, then I will take the Rams. I think the Rams are good enough to beat New Orleans. They were good enough in Week 9 to beat them. They just didn't make enough plays. So If they can correct those and go back down there, I think they get the win.
Okay, well, this is going to be a fascinating game, and I'll be missing you on the sidelines. I'm actually going to be watching from home because I elected not to go to Kansas City because I was a wimp and I didn't want to be in the Arctic blast.
That's not being a wimp. That's being smart. Absolutely.
Been there and done that. Hey, DeMarco, thanks for joining us in the Venue Kings Hotline. Looking forward to maybe seeing you in the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. I hope to see you there.
Always good to catch up with DeMarco Farr on the Venue Kings Hotline. You can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we get out the grade book with a report card. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app. It's time for the report card with the professor.
And of course, we dust off the report card every day. And of course, what we do is we check out the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the stupid, what people say, what people do. And we'll give you the anecdotes. We'll give you the story behind the story. We'll give you the sound. And then, of course, what we do is attach a grade with Stacey Ross. And Stacey, are you ready for today's report card?
I am so ready, you guys.
What makes you so ready today?
I'm just, you know, I was feeling kind of a little sick earlier this week, and now I've had a lot of coffee. Uh-huh. Feeling really hyped. Let's do this, Maura.
Hyped and jacked?
I'm hyped and jacked.
Well, are you guys ready for some more Antonio Brown drama?
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's a plenty these days.
We always are.
We got our DNF grades out here, so we're ready.
Okay. So, you know, yesterday we talked about Bruce Arians going on Adam Schefter's podcast and saying Brown was displaying some diva behavior.
Okay.
He also said that Antonio Brown was not the same Antonio Brown that he drafted. Antonio Brown decided to respond to that yesterday, saying he didn't draft me. He drafted Emmanuel Sanders, same guy who missed rehab to go on networks to talk about me on the situation. He have zero clue. Arians now wears Kangoo hats and glasses. I think he means Kangol. But I'm a diva. Done seen it all, then say we friends, stop lying.
Okay.
Okay.
Then, now that he's dragged Emmanuel Sanders into it, Emmanuel Sanders decided to get in on this.
Yeah, what did he do?
He said, you know damn well I didn't travel to L.A. to talk about you, fam. You trippin', yo. I went to be an analyst in which you acting foolish was the topic, and I gave my analytical opinion. Get off the gas, yo. You did it to yourself.
Oh, I love it. Way to go. Fight
oh
back,
gosh.
Emmanuel. Well, that's the way to
so
do
funny.
It. Hey, I mean, we got good grades on this. We'll give him an A-. That's the way to go.
We're starting with an A. Why the A-? Is it just the Antonio Brown you're tired of hearing about? You're like, response. But
listen, but this way, get used to hearing about it because it's going to be the biggest story of the offseason.
That's true.
Goes.
That's true. Yeah, we're going to keep talking about
it. It's not going to go away.
I'm going to, I'm the same as John. I'm going to give this an A. That's one of the funnier responses. I saw it yesterday and reread it this morning, and hearing it for like a third or fourth time, it's still funny.
The topic was you acting foolish. I gave my analytical opinion.
I just gave my analytical opinion on you acting like an idiot.
I know.
I also don't get him saying Arians didn't draft him. He drafted Emmanuel Sanders. It's like he drafted Emmanuel Sanders before you, but he still drafted you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, like, what does Emmanuel Sanders have to do with any of this? Maybe he saw him talking about it, so then
he's mad he got drafted earlier than him.
Maybe.
And then, yeah, I guess apparently he had some comments.
I just feel like every other report card is going to be something Antonio Brown is doing.
I don't think he makes as big a headlines, but Emmanuel Sanders is a bit of a diva, too. When I was in Denver, he had some run-ins with the media out there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like, what did he do?
Him and D-Mac from the Afternoon Drive show out there got into it a couple times.
Do you remember what about?
It was just, I think he kind of threw a fit and wanted the media out of the locker room one day, and they thought he was a bit divisive and selfish that year, and I think D-Mac said so on the radio, and then did not like
so
each
then they
other
got
after
into
that.
It.
Yeah,
okay, well, that happens.
Yeah, I think it's gotten better over the last couple of years, but
I mean,
it's always fine if you're getting better, or you're getting kind of growing.
Well, next we'll talk about we'll segue into Kyrie Irving. Now coming out and saying that he feels bad about his behavior when he was with the Cavs towards LeBron, and he apologized to him. But some people are wondering if this was the best decision, because it also seems like it's him kind of saying, now that I'm in the position that LeBron was in, I think my younger teammates are immature. Let's see what you guys think.
You know, I apologize for being that young player that wanted to everything at his you know, at his fingertips, and I wanted everything to be at, you know, my threshold. I wanted to be the guy that led us to the championship. I wanted to be the leader. I wanted to be all that, and, you know, the responsibility of being the best player in the world and leading a team is something that's not meant for many people, and Brown was one of those guys that came to Cleveland and tried to really show us what it's like to win a championship, and it was hard for him, and sometimes getting the most out of the group, it's not the easiest thing in the world.
So now we're supposed to believe that he's grown up and now he understands what LeBron's going through. I mean, when he acted like a diva himself and wanted to get out of there because it's like, I need a team for myself. And of course, his team isn't doing as well as it's supposed to be. And so it's like, okay, so I'm going to have to give him a D.
I can't tell. So are we questioning whether this is a genuine apology?
I think it's a genuine apology. I think he's saying he realizes now how hard it was for LeBron. But
you're saying there might not be a lot of...
It would have been more genuine in private, because now that you're making it public, you're kind of calling out your current teammates.
Yeah, I see that. I see that. Yeah, I'm going to give it a C, because I'm kind of indifferent either way. I don't mind like a somewhat public apology by an athlete, because it's going to be an issue that's covered until you say something, even if you privately apologize to that person or settle it. Like, how many times have we covered stuff with the Seahawks where like two players moved past it, but you know, we don't know that. So
I think it's just kind of like the referencing him learning how hard it is now makes it seem like it's because he doesn't like his current team.
Yeah, there's still some underlying
if he just straight up said, like, you know what, I've grown up and I feel bad about the way I treated him, then that would be great.
But there's still some shots. Yeah, I'm gonna give it a C.
All right, guys. We thought we were going to have some Marcus Peters content this week.
Oh, no.
And I don't know. The Rams staff must have finally gotten through to him, because this is all he had to say yesterday.
Y'all have fun spinning the gumbo thing all week, too. So, yeah.
No, but with the gumbo thing, I mean, Sean McVay just hollered in about soup. But, Marcus, does it make it more fun to kind of have, you know, banter like that back and forth?
Hey, man. My coach is a fiery coach. I'm a fiery player. We have fun with these things internally. We're going to try to lead y'all to be the media, so y'all do what y'all going to do with it.
So it's like he's now backing off a little bit, I take it.
Yeah, you think he's going to be able to stick with that?
No, come on. He blows up at moment's notice. I mean, I'm standing on the sidelines, and you know, he was jawing the entire game against the Cowboys and the receivers and Amari Cooper and all that stuff. I mean, he never lets it stop. And I know when we talked to DeMarco Farr about it, I mean, you know, he just realizes, like, you can get in his head. I mean, he's not as bad as, say, Vontaze Burfict, but you can definitely get into his head, and he's going to make mistakes that could cost him games. I mean, look what happened to him in the Seahawks game here in Seattle. I mean, he gets beaten for a 2-touchdown pass, or he gets beaten in the back of the end zone by Tyler Lockett, and he's out there yelling and screaming. It's like, trying to get a penalty, and he's blaming everybody else, and it was his fault because he had bad coverage. So, I mean, Marcus, I mean, you're a great quote. I mean, you're an alpha dog in the locker room. Love going over and talking to you, but I'm going to give you a C minus.
Yeah, I might do the same. I might do like a C or D. It's not because of what he said with the gumbo line last week. Like, I'm fine with that kind of jawing and trash talk. You're at such a competitive stage, not just in your career and as a team, but also in the NFL. I mean, this is now the conference championship. So, and it's Sean Payton. Like, we've known that this has been kind of a thing with him. So I'm fine with that. And I'm going to guess that just some kind of internal conversation happened between Sean McVay and Marcus Peters, where he was like, hey, maybe don't take attention away, or whatever that conversation was. Maybe they didn't have one. But one of my least favorite things is when it becomes like a, you guys in the media are making this a thing. And it's like,
whoa,
people were literally just reporting things.
You said, tell Sean Payton to keep talking that. Like, you made it a thing.
And the thing is, I don't disagree that sometimes the media, and I'm including just as a whole, takes a story and rolls with it, and sometimes takes it too far, and sometimes keeps at it too long, and that's totally fair. But I don't think that happened in this case. I think it's just that the reporters there thought this might still be a storyline, so they were asking about it, and then he's kind of...
Well, Sean Payton did comment on it. He said, I don't really like gumbo or seafood. I'm more of a steak guy.
Oh, gumbo's delicious, though.
Well, yeah, I would think that would dock him some points in New Orleans.
Yeah, it should. Rightfully so. I'm going to give this a C or a D, because I just think that it's easier to say this as someone who isn't in the position, but I think it's just kind of a cop-out sometimes to be like, you know, you guys do whatever you want with it. C.
So. And then when you do it, then he gets mad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you said it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I like him as a player. I really do. But yeah, kind of own up.
Yeah. And you said, tell Sean Payton this. Yeah. You wanted it to get out there.
Yeah.
All right. That's all I have for grades for you guys today.
Okay. And you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we will take their text questions at 710-710. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And so it's time to take your text questions. So text away at 710-710. Let's see what we got, Maura.
425 says, Mr. Clayton, in your lifetime, who was the most underrated wide receiver?
Let's see. You go back because you have to go back some. Yeah. I thought that you go back into the, we shouldn't go back into the 70s. I mean, nobody's going to recognize any of the names of guys. I mean, I thought John Stallworth, until he went into the Hall of Fame, was under-recognized, but then he did get recognized and get in there. I think that, you look at Isaac Bruce. I mean, again, still not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, so he needs to get a little bit more recognition. But, at least he's recognized in the fact that he's in there. Torrey Holt's not in that top 15. You can say to a certain degree Doug Baldwin, although he's been to two Pro Bowls, I mean, he kind of gets under-recognized. If you look at some of the current receivers that are out there, I mean, now they're starting to get the appreciation of Juju Smith-Schuster. I mean, he's now at that Pro Bowl level, but he was playing pretty well. I mean, there's, again, sometimes it takes a little bit of time for guys to, step up and get recognized.
206 says, any free agents that the Hawks can recruit to help out Frank Clark?
They can be the equal, or at least somebody, they have to get that in the draft. Because again, if you're going to get that, you're going to be paying, almost Frank Clark type money. And so, a guy that I thought would have helped out last year was Connor Barwin, but again, you're talking about, somebody who's going to cost maybe $1 million, $1.5 million. But remember, I mean, this team now needs to get draft choices. And to get draft choices, if you're going to lose free agents, you need the compensatory picks. And so, they're not going to be big spenders in free agency, nor should they.
The 360 says, John, are you going to the Super Bowl this year? And how many have you been to in your career?
I'm going, indeed, a week from Sunday. You'll be there.
Yeah.
And Jessamine's going to be there. And so looking forward to that. I think I said like 42 I've been to right now.
Wow. Any stand out to you more than others?
I mean, you certainly, one of my favorites, I mean, even though it was in Detroit and really cold there, in fact, it was so cold that I remember that, they had the Super Bowl in an ice number, right? And it was right outside the hotel, and the number grew as the week went on. That's how bad it was. But, I mean, that San Francisco game against Cincinnati was absolutely fantastic. The Pittsburgh game, we had the James Harrison interception, and I think that was down in Miami. That was a great one. A lot of times, I mean, some of the most recent Super Bowls are great. I mean, New England against the Rams, that was fantastic. Certainly the Giants against the Patriots. Sorry about that, Maura. That
right.
was fun.
It happens.
Yeah, it happens. But no, there's been a lot of good ones. And certainly, I mean, the New England Seattle game was a great one.
Yeah. There's so many. I'm so glad that I get to go with you now. Hopefully this year will be pretty epic, too.
And it won't be cold.
Yes.
Like it was in Minnesota.
Yes, I'm very much excited about that. 425 says, Mr. Clayton, who has the best beard in football, Franco Harris or any others?
Oh, I think you have to look at Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you top that beard? I mean, that thing is just magic. I mean, it's just massive. So I give it to Ryan Fitzpatrick. Fitz magic and the magic beard.
253 says, Professor, please enlighten me. There's much criticism of Russell Wilson that quarterback ratings are not what makes a quarterback good, but rather completion percentage and total yards passing. Which one is better?
I go for yards per attempt because, again, that's moving the ball downfield. And, the better you are on that, the better you're going to be as a quarterback. I mean, completion percentage sometimes can get overrated. I mean, look, for example, Case Keenum in his last year in Minnesota. I mean, he completed like 71% of his passes. He had a good year, but his yards per attempt weren't good. I mean, sometimes you'll see that with Derek Carr. I mean, so the yards per attempt is a very important one. I mean, if you complete 71% of your passes and you get 6.4 yards an attempt, I mean, you're going to be probably a six-win team.
360 says, 707 says, hey, Professor, if you were starting a coaching staff, who would you hire as your OC and DC?
my OC, and now can I take current head coaches, or do I have? Because again, I would hire Sean McVay. I mean, certainly Andy Reid. I mean, you know, those guys are fantastic. You'd have to give Josh McDaniels some consideration, but I wouldn't want to be on any kind of staff with him. As far as next wave type of guys, I mean, I think even though he didn't do well in Minnesota, I think John DeFilippo has some good play calling ability. I mean, you have to kind of respect what you saw out of Todd Monken out of Tampa Bay, because I mean, what he was able to do with that offense and get the yards and stuff of that nature with two quarterbacks, that's pretty good.
253 says, hey, John and Mora, is Doug Baldwin's contract up this year, and what do you see the Seahawks doing with him?
No, I mean, he continues on his contract, and you know, he's still got more time. He's definitely going to be on the roster next year because, again, you don't want to get rid of him. He's too valuable. I mean, you talk about, you know, Russell Wilson's quarterback numbers. You know, look at him with Doug Baldwin, without Doug Baldwin, and you saw when, even though he's fighting through injuries, you know, Doug, when he's in there, helps move the chains, so he's fine.
253 says, tell John it's going to be 25 degrees in Kansas City. Book your flight.
A little too late right now. It's too late to get credentials. So it's one thing to be able to go, but again, you have to make sure you get the credential request in. And it's too late to get it in now.
907 says, Mora, how do you get along with Jessamine as a New England fan?
Ooh, that's a good question.
We get along great just fine. Question. She likes to talk a lot of smack about Tom Brady, but, you know, most of the time, she's just really sad about the decisions the Jets make, so I don't rub it in, and we get along just fine. We love each other. 509 says, yo, JC, is there a story behind your discontent for Joshy Boy?
I mean, no, just the reality that he did a bad job as he was coaching in with the Denver Broncos. What he did certainly with the Indianapolis Colts was just absolutely horrendous. I mean, you know, what you saw in St. Louis, particularly when he was there with Sam Bradford, is that, he kept on getting Bradford hit, and he wouldn't adjust his offense. And so, just seeing some of that body of work, again, I respect his play calling, but again, the way that, he doesn't deal well with people, and that's not good. Good coach, but again, not a great communicator.
509 says, hey, John, do you see Mike B or Bruce Irvin coming back to retire with the Hawks?
I don't see why not. Because again, it's like they had such a big role, and again, they had such great play, and you even saw this year Michael Bennett had great play. But yeah, I could see them coming back, but again, not as players, but again, I think you can see them coming back and getting honored.
425 says, what kind of contract will Ziggy Ansah get?
Because of the injuries, I don't think he's going to be able to get to 17 or 18. So I'm thinking he probably gets like a Danielle Hunter type of contract at 14.4, 14.5.
The 206 wants to know when they announce compensatory picks.
They announce it used to be at the owners' meeting, which would have been in March, but now right toward the end of February, right about where the combine is. So sometime right around the last week of February. So that's when they'll announce them.
425 says, how many of the Seahawks draft picks do you think they will use on defense this year?
Right now we have to find out how many more, because they only have four draft choices right now, and they need to get more picks. And, of course, that's either a trade downs, trading some guys in their squad, getting some compensatory picks and being able to trade them. And so, at this stage, I'd say it would probably be three out of four on defense.
206 says, what does Russell Wilson's next contract look like money-wise?
I'd say $34 to $35 million. I think he's actually going to be able to top an Aaron Rodgers contract. What you hope, it's not going to be that two-year type of deal where he's going to be doing the franchise tag, because that hurts more than it does help.
Sorry about that. Looking for the 509 wants to know, hey, Professor Penny, J.C. Penny, most comfortable pair of shoes that you own?
Pretty much. I mean, I go around in sneakers all the time. So it's like, I guess that's the most comfortable. I mean, because again, that's what I use all the time. I mean, I rarely have to get dressed up and have to wear regular type of shoes. And so just the sneakers.
Nice. Dave Wyman sometimes likes to talk about how he likes to wear his nice soft slippers at home. And Danny gives him a pretty hard time about it.
Oh, I can imagine. That's you got to rip him on that.
360 says, what pick compensation could we get for Doug Baldwin?
right now. Again, he's not a free agent. I mean, so it's irrelevant. They can't get any kind of a pick for him. And it's like they're not going to trade him, so he's too valuable to the team. You know, and if he goes out in free agency, particularly at the end of his contract, he's going to be in the 30s. And so now you're talking about, you know, getting $5 to $6 million, and that's probably going to be, you know, a fifth-round compensatory.
360 says, is Kyler Murray seriously a first-rounder?
I think he is, yeah. I mean, it's more the need for the position because, again, you know, he's 5'9", but he's mobile. And, you know, I think right now the grade on him is low first round. I mean, I have a mock draft coming up for the Washington Post, and I have him going to the Redskins.
360 says, John, would you ever call Josh McDaniels Joshy Boy to his face?
Man, maybe. I'm not going to be in his face, so it's like not going to spend much time with him, but...
It's a possibility in the future.
You never know. You never know.
All right. That's it for text today.
Okay. You can check out the show, 710 Sports App, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Coming up next, it's Dave Crosby.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports App.
And joining us right now is Dave Crosby. And so, Dave, we see that Russell Wilson is investing in baseball in Portland. Is this a good investment or a bad investment? it would be nice, I guess, but again, is this going to work out? I mean, can you see Portland getting an expansion team?
I gotcha. Yes, I would say that Portland would be one of the top five candidates for an expansion baseball franchise.
Mm-hmm.
So it's potentially a good investment.
Yeah, and at what point, because I do think that that number 32 is a good number. It works for football, and I don't think that's why I won't see any expansion in the National Football League. But at some point, I mean, you would think that with hockey and basketball and with now baseball, to get to 32 is not a bad way to do it.
Nope, and baseball is not necessarily talking out loud about expansion right now, but if they did, Portland would definitely be a candidate for it, and it makes some sense to get on the ground floor of it if you can, but there's nothing in the offing immediately.
No.
It's kind of like NBA in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Makes a lot of sense, but there's nothing on the horizon right now.
Understandable. So what kind of impact would that have on the Mariners?
I would think it would have a massively positive impact on the Mariners. Massively positive impact on the Mariners, because right now the closest team for the Mariners is 750 miles away, basically.
Mm-hmm.
There's no rival. There's no natural rival. If they were now watch baseball do something stupid like put them in the National League,
yeah.
But if they were put them in the American League and they were to meet in the American League West and they were to meet 19, 20 times a year the way the schedule is set up right now, it's got a tremendous amount of potential. Sonics Blazers, you know, shared a fan base for a while. And when I first came to town, when the Sonics would occasionally play games in the Kingdom, occasionally played games at the Tacoma Dome, and since Portland had such a small arena capacity at that time, you'd have a lot of Blazer fans come up there. It was like a party. It had 30,000 in the Kingdom. We've already seen the impact it's had on Major League Soccer. That Timbers rivalry is a fantastic rivalry with Seattle. So I would think for the Mariners, it would be nothing but good news. Now, I don't know about how they feel about sharing, you know, the revenue rights and things like that. I'm sure the Mariners enjoy having the entire Pacific Northwest region themselves. But from a fan standpoint, it'd be terrific.
Yeah, because it would really make for some interesting summers.
I mean, sure.
I mean, with the rivalry and
potentially
all
anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And of course, I mean, it would get, I think, fans a little bit more mobile because I think they'd be driving back and forth.
Depending on which teams are doing well, for sure they would. But it would definitely. I don't think there's any question that it would ultimately enhance the interest in baseball. Again, I can't speak to how it would impact television rights and things like that. But in terms of baseball fan interest, I don't see any way it wouldn't increase it.
So what do you think the timetable? I know there's no plan right now, but how many years down the line do you think they'll do this?
I don't know. It's a good question. Baseball, though it's not drawing particularly well, is very, very, very fit financially. They've got a lot of teams with huge television deals because of, you know, the fact that it provides so much content and, you know, cable networks have proliferated all over the place, specifically built around sports teams and most specifically built around baseball teams. It's become a very profitable business. So I would assume that it wouldn't be that far in the offing, but I can only imagine what the cost of a franchise would be.
Oof.
Although, unlike the NHL, they don't really need to stiff the guys coming in because they have such tremendous television deals. you know, National Hockey League's charging about a $650 million fee for Seattle to become an expansion team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I'd see that happening in baseball necessarily.
No, but I think that what they're talking about with the stadium and the rights fees to get the team, you're talking $2.5 billion.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Although,
a lot of money.
That doesn't get you that only gets you the Carolina Panthers, I guess.
Right. It's not the NFL, that's for sure.
But there's no doubt revenue is doing pretty well in this sport.
It definitely is, John. Hey, it's a big night in college basketball in town, you know.
I know. Stanford in?
Stanford is in, and New Mexico State is in.
Oh, that's nice.
We'll start with Washington. Washington has got a chance this weekend if they can beat Stanford tonight and beat Cal on Saturday. And Cal is, I think, bringing up the rear in the Pac-12. Start 5-0 in the Pac-12 for the first time, John. You want to guess how many years?
25?
35.
Wow.
First time since the 80s, since Detlef Schrempf was prowling the sidelines for Washington, was playing. I think 83, 84 was the last time Washington started 5-0 in the Pac-12. So, and it was the Pac-8 or Pac-10 mm-hmm. back then. So Washington's got a chance to have one of their best starts and doing it with defense. And Stanford is 8-8, kind of had a season-saving win last week, using the words of my friend Percy Allen at the Times, against Arizona State, but they lost a big key transfer at the start of the year. They were supposed to be a real contender, but that's a big game for them. And then New Mexico State is playing Seattle U tonight. Seattle U has lost three straight, but they're 12-6. New Mexico State is 14-3, always good. And Mexico State grad Pascal Siakam is going to be an all-star this year for Toronto. So that was a great game last year. They split the series last year, so you got four very good basketball teams playing hoops tonight in Seattle.
How good is that as far as just making the winner go right?
It's huge. It's huge, especially, you know, it's sort of unfortunate that Seattle U's got to play all, they don't get to play a key arena anymore, so, you know, their games are all in a small location. But the Huskies basketball team really, really turned it around last year under their first coach, under their first year coach, and this year has just expounded on it. I think it's terrific to fill the void that we have till baseball comes.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's going to be a great thing. And of course, I guess we all have to respect Mike Hopkins. And I think more than anything else, how the athletic director identified to getting him, and what a great coach they got.
Yeah, on the surface, you're talking about a lifelong assistant coach in 3,000 miles away, basically in Syracuse, New York, who was lined up to be Jim Boeheim's successor, who didn't want to leave. You brought him out to the Pacific Northwest, put him in a different recruiting environment. You really, you know, I mean, on the surface, it seemed like a kind of a curious move. He didn't seem to be a guy who knew the area that well. He got fortunate, I think, and being able to snag Cameron Dollar, who'd been an assistant at Washington before he was Seattle U head coach, a guy who had been beating the bushes for talent in the Pacific Northwest for 20 years. On his staff and immediately paid dividends for them. And Jen Cohn, it's a tremendous hire, absolutely tremendous hire for her. And it looks like nothing but bouquets for Washington going forward. I mean, they seem to have, you're talking about salad days for the Washington athletic programs, you know, the two major ones. And they've had some success with the women in recent years and things like that as well. But men's basketball, men's football are really the economic engines of any major college's athletic department, and Washington's got them both going very, very well for the first time in a long time.
But, of course, now there's a little bit of concern on the football side because it sounds like Alabama wants to go after Jimmy Lake.
Well, I don't think that there's nothing against Jimmy Lake, but I think, you know, as long as you got Chris Peterson there, even though he had a rough year this year, you're going to be fine. I mean, he'll tap a quality assistant if he needs to, and I don't blame Alabama for going after Jimmy Lake. He's a terrific assistant coach, but that's something that you can withstand.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be hurtful, at least because, again, I think he's such a good recruiter. I think he's a good coach, but at some point, you know, you're going to lose him.
Sure, I mean that's always the case. So I mean, we'll see if that winds up having an impact on him, but I think they're in pretty good shape.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be the battle. And of course, I mean, what is it with Nick? I mean, he has more resources than just about any other coach. And even though it's tough to work with him, and I know that from the years I've known him,
mm-hmm.
People are going to go there because they're going to get paid and they're going to be up there in prominence.
That's, you just answered your own question, John.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly why they do it. I mean, because they're going to get paid and they're going to have the spotlight on them. I mean, that's, you know, what Saban has created there, through his ability, I suppose, is the powerhouse program. Even though Clemson, you know, knocked them off in the national championship game, and Clemson has been just as good. Alabama is still the standard, and it's a great jumping off point for lots of guys. So, not surprising that, that's the case there. It's just a question of how long he'll want to keep coaching.
Exactly. Well, I think he's going to coach. He and Belichick and Pete Carroll, I think they're going to easily go into their 70s.
If they want to, right?
Yeah, maybe Belichick might not, but he might pull out a little bit earlier. But again, they just love coaching, and I know Nick that well. I mean, he's not going to step down, but he signed a contract extension that takes him into his 70s.
Yeah, what is he, 68 right now?
68, yeah.
Yeah, it seemed only health would slow him down, I would assume.
Mm-hmm. But that's good. So what's on Bob Graz and Tom today?
Fantastic stuff starting at 12 noon, as a matter of fact.
Okay, well, that'll be
I don't have the show sheet in front of me, John, well, then, so I'm tap dancing a little bit.
No, so that'll be a good thing. But again, hey, it's got Bob, it got Tom, and it got Graz.
That's so right.
Can't get any better than that. And again, thank you for everything today. We'll
Thanks,
be back
John.
Again tomorrow at 10. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.